This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Money Manager Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Thursday, November 6th, 2014 edition of Invest Talk. Wow, the year's gone by fast. Now, why stock markets crashes happen? Why stock market crashes happen? That's our main talking points today. I'm going to discuss, you know, what is a bubble and a crash? What does that mean? And then I'm going to go over some examples in history. I love this topic. This is my favorite topic just because I think that it's history. I love history. I love the history of financial markets because I'm a true believer that human nature does not change. And what has happened in the past will happen again. And these are perfect examples of how bubbles happened in the past and misery was created out of them. And, you know, a period of time lapses and there is another bubble. And that will happen forever. And I truly believe that. There will never not be bubbles. It won't be, okay, we're done with bubbles, never be bubble again. Nope, that's never going to happen. We're humans. We're emotional beings. And this is why bubbles are created, because money is an emotional thing. And that is why I love this topic, because it really taps into the human emotion and why we have bubbles, why and examples of them, and they're great learning lessons. Every single one of these is a great learning lesson, and I want to touch on them. There's a lot of examples here, but I'm going to try to get to all of them along with our other talking points as well. Now, welcome to our Thursday edition of Invest Talk. We try to work with you to help you make better investing choices, to help you avoid costly investing mistakes. We all make hundreds of decisions every day. We go to the we go on the best information that we have, and our goal here is to give you good information, good perspective. And, you know, we're all hopefully very diligent, and we take the time to find out more before we make a big move. But good information is key, and then comes the hard part, making a decision based on the facts and not on our emotions, going back to the emotional part again. Now, it's easy to get emotional. With the volatility of the market and world events, it's challenging to keep your head clear and cool. So how do you handle changes in the market that catch up by surprise? Here's some perspective that might help. The market never stays the same for long. No market is the same. Periods of low volatility are followed by periods of high volatility. Bull markets follow bear markets, and the sun sets and the sun rises. You know, our world is a series of cycles, and financial markets are no different. So there sure are valid reasons for why these things happen, but it's more important to realize that change is constant and to not be surprised when it happens. Be ready. Always on guard. Now, you know, we've been beating the drum about our domestic problems as well as problems abroad, EU, China being the main culprits. And you can find reasons why they do what they do, and you should never be surprised. Now, one way to gain perspective is to join in on the conversation. I want to hear about your thoughts when it comes to money, a particular stock, a sector of the market, the broader market as a whole, certain countries, because remember, we're in a globalized environment. It's very important to understand what's going on globally as well. Now, what have been your experiences as a long-time investor? Or even if you're just starting out, what are you thinking about? I can help you with anything that is on your mind when it comes to money. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us by phone whenever you listen. And remember, if you're traveling, you can always hear us live, 4 to 5 Pacific time, on investtalk.com, or you can listen to our podcast, and you can get that on iTunes and TuneIn Radio and a lot of other ways that you can gather podcasts these days. Now let's get to the phones right now. Here's our first question of the day from our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. This is Bruce from New York. I listen to your show every day via podcast. Thank you for all the information. Great show. A quick question regarding long-term planning. I am 60 years old. I've never been a fan of bonds and their lack of availability or high fees, and I'm very slowly moving my portfolio from more risky small and mid-caps to a more stable, well-run large-cap portfolio. So this is the question. Would you recommend a portfolio that substitutes blue chips, large caps, instead of bonds for an older individual who does not mind bearing a higher degree of risk? Again, fantastic show. Thanks again. Bye.
All right. Well, I don't mind that strategy, but you have to understand what type of risk you are taking. So you say, you know, you have a higher ability to handle risk. Well, that's fine. But, you know, is a 20 to 30% downside for a particular stock, is that comfortable for you? For example, you know, to me, when I think of bond proxies in the equity markets, and when I mean bond proxy, I mean something that has a good yield, a steady yield, usually doesn't have a lot of growth potential, but pays a steady dividend. That dividend is safe, and it's really not that volatile. That's kind of a bond proxy, because that's kind of how bonds are, right? They're usually not that volatile. They have a steady dividend, but there's not a lot of growth prospects to them. And to me, you know, the likes of Verizon and AT&T, those to me are bond proxies. Those are bond proxies in the overall market, and that's what I'm, you know, that's what I would look at, companies like that. But, you know, for example, AT&T went from $43 a share in a high in 2007 all the way down in the low of 2008 to about 21 and change. So, you know, that's about over a 50% drop in AT&T. Verizon went from, about a high of 46 to a low of 23. So another 50% drop in that name as well. So these are bond proxies that still have a good amount of volatility. So understand that equities, while you can have things that pay good dividends and are less volatile than the overall market, don't think that there are many equities out there that during a big bear market won't have large volatility. Excuse me. Got a little tickle in my throat. So don't think that, you know, you can invest in big blue chip stocks and be immune from volatility. No. They're going to have volatility, and they're going to have more volatility than bonds. I don't care how unrisky you get, low beta stocks, whatever, however you want to measure volatility and riskiness of an equity, they're going to have more volatility than bonds. Period. So if you understand that and you're willing to take that risk, sure, I don't have a problem with that. But you got to have the ability to take that risk. If you build a portfolio of these bond proxies, you know, companies that are big blue chip names with big dividends, like AT&T, like Verizon, just know that can go down 50%. That portfolio can still go down 50%, maybe even more. If we have a big economic, think of, you know, we're talking about bubbles and crashes. Think about the Great Depression. There will be a Great Depression again. I'm not saying it's going to happen soon. I'm not saying it won't. I'm just saying that could happen, and, you know, anything equity related is going to go down dramatically like that. So just, you have to understand the type of risk that you're taking. While big blue chip, steady, large cap names with good dividends are safer than bonds, or are safer than the typical equity, they're more susceptible to big price swings than pretty much, I would say, not any type of bond, but most types of bonds. Right? Now, possibly the greatest illusion we have is that denial protects us. Being asleep is what can hurt us. Why stock market crash. Why crashes happen. That's our talking point today. But I also have some other things on my mind. We have the jobs report coming out tomorrow. Robert Johnson from Morningstar, he thinks we could have a downside surprise. I'm going to talk about why he thinks that, and I kind of agree with him. And then let's go to, this is in relation to our main talking point, global financial cycles. Where are we now? I talked about cycles in the stock market. Well, there are cycles in the financial markets, the credit markets as well. Where are we now, and what does that mean? And then if we have time, finding gems among junk bonds. Junk bonds have been weak, hasn't been looking that great in the junk bond market, giving us opportunity, and how might we find opportunity in that market as well. So that's what is on my mind. Those are the things that I want to discuss today, but ultimately I want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART is our number. 888-992-4278 is the number how to get through. Let's talk a little bit about the overall market. S&P was up 7 points today, NASDAQ up 17, the Dow was up 69, gold was flat, gold stocks were up pretty decently, the GDX was up nicely today, oil was down a little bit, not as down as much as you expect after OPEC cut their demand forecast globally. Now that was on the back of them keeping their production steady and cutting their prices here in the U.S. So I don't think it's something that it was a big shock to anybody, but at the same time, oil is still down and it remains weak, but it looks to be, I think, maybe at least a short-term bottom in oil. I'm not saying it is, it's just starting to look that way. All right, so that's our... That was the market for us today, and everyone's just waiting for the jobs number tomorrow. Really, that's the big news that's going to come out. And I think expectations are on 240,000 jobs, something like that. Last month we had a 230 to 250, somewhere in that range is what is expected. Now, creating a realistic retirement budget, investing and managing your money wisely to ensure it lasts as long as you need it. Do you need help with all of this? Do you need help with any of this? Do you need help with more? What do you need help figuring out? Give us a call. We are here for you at 888-99-CHART.
This is Invest Talk as we continue now with your questions and comments too. 888-99-CHART is how to reach Justin right now.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's go to Mike in San Jose. How you doing, Mike?
Good, thank you, Justin. I've got a question on the gold miners, GDX.
Yeah.
Do you think it has bottom or it's got plenty more to go?
I think it's showing signs of a bottom. I mean, there was massive volume over the past 5 or 6 trading days, and a lot of times that's usually a sign of capitulation. So I think that's entirely possible. Do I say the bottom is in? I'm not convinced yet that the bottom is in, but I do think that it is entirely possible. So I'm like I said, I'm not calling it. I think there is potential for more downside. I think a lot depends on what happens tomorrow. I don't say a lot depends, but could be an interesting spark to the market tomorrow. If the jobs number is weak, you know, maybe the market starts speculating that, you know, QE is coming back, or rate hikes are being pushed off into maybe 2016, things like that, and that can push the dollar down and gold up. So I think it's showing signs, but I'm not convinced yet. To me, it's got to get back above 18. If it can close back above $18 a share, it's at 17.21 now, then I think you have the seeds of a good rally. Thanks for calling, Mike. Not only can you listen to us on your own term, anytime and any place, you can also get your question to us whenever it's convenient. Give us a call, 888-99-CHART is how to reach us.
What's ahead on the next podcast, our talking point? Will all this money flying out the window through share buybacks and special dividends risk killing the bull run? Companies paying out more than reinvesting. That's our talking point for Thursday, November 6th, and we hope you'll listen at that time. In the meantime, why not use our free risk analysis tool to help you determine your true risk level? It's there for you on investtalk.com. And thanks again for subscribing to our podcast.
This is Invest Talk with portfolio manager Justin Klein, and he welcomes your call as we move into the final segment of this hour. 888-99-CHART is how to reach him right now.
Let's go to Kelly in San Jose. How are you doing, Kelly?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Thank you, Justin.
What can I do for you?
I was wondering for this stock, Alibaba, BABA, what is a good entry point to keep going up?
Well, you know, that's it's a great question. It's this is a new issue. This is Alibaba Group. Most people know, I've heard about this this company and their IPO. Now, this is a Hong Kong-based company. And this year they're supposed to make they made $1.83. Next year, $2.22 expected. In 2016, $3.01. And it's trading at $111.57. So the PE is in the high 30 range. If you go by 2016, if you go by next year's earnings, it's probably somewhere in the high 40s. So it's pretty expensive. They do have a decent amount of debt. They're very profitable. You know, an entry point in this is extremely hard. You don't buy it up here. I mean, this is extremely overbought. It's gone from 85 to 111 in the span of, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. So it's extremely overbought. I wouldn't be buying it up here. This is not where you want to be buying it. You know, I would say right back around $100 a share. That's where the first support level is. But the problem is this is just a overvalued name. Earnings are decelerating. Revenues are still steadily going up at about 50% clip, but earnings only grew 15% last quarter, where, you know, a year ago they were growing 150%. So you're starting to see a slowdown there, which worries me. You know, I'm not a big fan of Alibaba in the short term, and I'm not a big fan of if you've listened to the show for a while, we don't buy IPOs. IPOs are historically overvalued, and there's always ones that do well. You know, think of Google, but there are many, many more that flop over time. And, you know, will Alibaba eventually flop? It's hard to know, but this is a completely speculative name, and I would not be investing in Alibaba.
So, as a general rule, you usually buy IPO stocks, say 6 months after IPO or a year after IPO, or
closer to a year. You know, 6 months is minimum, but I would say at least having a full year of trading, and, you know, get a full year under its belt to hopefully get rid of any excess frothiness and speculation around the stock. And, you know, that's definitely still. There for Alibaba. You know, just think of, you know, remember Facebook? You know, Facebook flopped initially.
Right.
And, you know, a year later, you know, it IPO'd in May of 2012, and May of 2013, it was still down, you know, 30% or so. Now, all the speculation there had been eaten away. And, you know, now it's doing well, but, you know, you at least had some history of it after about a year, and you got rid of that over speculation. So I think Baba is in the same boat as Facebook.
Okay. Got it. All right.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you very much.
No problem. Well, let's talk about bubbles and crashes. And, you know, bubbles occur when investors put so much faith in one particular company, or, you know, the economy as a whole. You know, in the tech bubble, it was an entire sector that they thought was going to drive the world economy, and really it didn't have a lot of, you know, meat in those potatoes, right? Or meat on the bone. However, whatever analogy you want to use. And what happens is investors drive the price well beyond any accurate or rational reflection of actual worth, which is demonstrated by the performance of the underlying company or economy or sector. And a crash is usually almost always happens after some doubt starts to creep into the marketplace, right? And there's usually panic selling, and, you know, the panic selling begets more panic selling, and it usually becomes pretty ugly. And crashes in the stock market always create some sort of recession, and at times they've created depressions. Now, a relationship between bubbles and crashes is similar to the relationship between clouds and rain. You can't have really a crash without some sort of a bubble, right? So let's go back in history. Let's go back in history and discuss some of the examples of big, big bubbles and miserable crashes. And the one that most people talk about when it comes to history is the tulip bubble. I hope everyone's heard about the tulip bubble, knows about the tulip bubble. Happened in Holland between 1634 and 1637. It's a very interesting case study. And after the break, I'm going to get to it. Where did it start? What type of peak to trough decline was there? And what sparked the crash? What sparked the boom and what sparked the crash? And it's going to be a good history lesson. Now, what money matters do you need to know more about? What about annuities? They can be very appealing on the surface, but there's a lot more to know. So there's lots to talk about there, and you can get more into depth at our Wealth Workshop webinar coming up next week, November 12th at 6:30 Pacific Time. Sign up for free on investtalk.com.
You're listening to Invest Talk. How often should you check your retirement portfolio for diversification and allocation? Call and ask about it. 888-99-CHART is how to reach Justin right now on Invest Talk.
The tulip bubble. The tulip bubble. This took place from 1634 to 1637 in Holland. And it's hard to measure the peak to trough decline, but give you a little bit of context. At the peak, near the peak of the tulip craze, a person could trade a single tulip for an entire estate, you know, a big mansion. And at the bottom, a tulip trade for the price of a common onion. So it's quite the drop, if you say. Now, 1593, tulips were brought from Turkey and introduced to the Dutch. And the novelty of this new flower made it widely sought after and therefore fairly pricey. Now, after a certain time, 40 years or so, tulips contracted a non-fatal virus known as mosaic, which didn't kill them but altered their look and created flames of color. It made them look cooler than they had been in the past. Now, this sparked the ones that had this virus started to sell at a premium because they looked better, and began to rise in price according to how the virus altered their appearance. Now, everyone began to deal in these tulip bulbs, and essentially, a speculation in the tulip market was started. And a lot of people thought it had no limit. Soon, prices were rising so fast and high that people were trading their land, life savings, and anything else they could liquidate to get more tulip bulbs. In 1 month, tulip prices jumped 20-fold, meaning 2,000% in 1 month. 1 month. Now, there's always some spark that pops the bubble, right? And some prudent people decided to sell their tulips and crystallize their profits. Now, this started a domino effect, and prices began to dive, causing people to panic and sell regardless of their losses. Dealers refused to honor contracts. People began to realize that they traded their homes for a piece of greenery. Panic and pandemonium set in. Government attempted to step in and halt the crash by offering to honor contracts at 10% of face value. But then the market plunged even lower than that. And it shows you that government always tries to step in. This is part of part and parcel to what happens. Think of the financial crisis here. Government stepped in, right? Now, the effects of the tulip craze left the Dutch very hesitant about speculative investments for quite some time. And investors now know that it's better to stop, smell the flowers, and stake your future upon one. All right. So that was the tulip bubble. That was really the first in recorded history. I'm sure there were ones before it, but that is the most popular that goes back, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years. Then you move forward about, let's see, that crash in 1637, and you move forward roughly 70 years, and you get to 1711 in the United Kingdom. And this is the South Sea Bubble. South Sea Bubble, and stocks in the South Sea Bubble were traded for 1,000 British pounds at the peak, and they were reduced to nothing by the latter half of 1720. Now, in the 1700s, the British Empire was like we are, the global power. And the 18th century was a time of prosperity, opulence, meaning large sections of the population had money to invest and were looking for places to put their money, meaning there was money to be put to work, investing in new business endeavors. So the South Sea Company started a... So what happened is South Sea Company had no problem attracting these investors when, with an IOU to the government worth 10 million pounds, they purchased the right to all trade in the South Seas. Now, the East India Company was paying out, and so a lot of companies started to spring up that were trading, and the East India Company was paying out considerable tax-free dividends to a mere 499 investors. All there could be was 499 investors for this tax-free dividend. Now the South Sea Bubble, South Sea Company was perched on the top of all of this. They were the creme de la creme. They had a monopoly on earth, on trade. And they the very first issuance of stock could not satisfy the appetite of all these speculators with all this money. And the popular concept was that they were trading with Mexico and South America, and they were trading wool and fleece in exchange for jewelry and gold. And they kept issuing more and more stock, and people just kept buying it because they believed no matter what, they were going to do well, they were going to make money. Now, another British company, the Mississippi Company, established itself in France by a former British exile named John Law. And he didn't even trade. All he did was trade the gold and silver and jewelry for paper currency and took his cut. And at one point, the Mississippi Company stock was worth 80 times more than all the gold and silver in France. So there was massive, massive speculation on all these companies that were trading and facilitating trade throughout the world. And British investors were desperate to put their money. And they were blind to many indications that the South Sea Company was running poorly. They were really breaking even because it wasn't run properly. Whole shipments of wool were misdirected and left decayed in foreign ports. Now, the demand for investing caused IPOs to sprout out everywhere, meaning new companies like the South Sea Bubble sprang up, and they would IPO, and companies promised to reclaim sunshine from vegetables, I'm not joking, to build floating mansions to extend the British Empire. They all sold like mad. Think of the tech bubble when tech companies went public, saying that they were, all they had to do was say that they were a .com, and guess what? Everybody and their mother bought them because they thought they were going to be the next big company on the internet. Now, eventually, the management in the South Sea Company took a step back, realized that their value of the shares in no way reflected the actual value of the company or its dismal earnings, so they decided to sell their stock in the summer of 1720, hoping that no one would pay attention. Guess what? Word spread, panic selling started to ensue, and the huge hole in the South Sea bubble also punctured the Mississippi Company and all the other IPOs that came out during that time. And the British government, and the devastation was so bad that the British government outlawed the issuing of stock certificates, and that was not repealed for over 100 years till 1825. So those are just a couple of examples. I have more. Maybe, hopefully we'll get to them by the end of the day. We don't have a ton of time left in the show. But those are a couple of good examples. And trust me, it'll only happen again. It will be a different asset. It'll be different people involved. It'll be something different next time. But I promise you, it will happen again. Tech bubble happened. The real estate bubble happened. There will be another bubble in something. Just be aware and have your eye out for it, because you'll hear it at cocktail parties. All your friends are going to be talking about it, just like everyone was talking about real estate in 05. When that happens, you know, likely, we're in a bubble. Now, our podcast listeners from all over the world download our program. Now, if you'd like to join them, you can subscribe for free on iTunes. If you have a question for us, you can always ask it at 888-99-CHART.
Hello, this is Mark in Columbus, Ohio, calling for Steve or Justin, listening on iTunes. I have a question about offshore trusts or asset protection trusts. I want to protect my money from government taxes. I'm 44. I have about $200,000 to $500,000 I'd like to move into an asset protection trust offshore. I was wondering what you've heard about this and what your opinion was about it. Excellent show. Looking forward to your program. Thanks.
All right, asset protection trust. You know, I've heard of these things, and they really cover a wide spectrum of different legal structures. So there's a lot of ways that you can do this. There's the Bahamas, Bermuda, Cayman Islands, Switzerland. There's a lot of ways that you can set up a trust in other countries to avoid taxes. I'm not going to say you should go out there and do it. There are risks involved. They are complex. It's really all about the lawyers that you have and whether you trust the lawyers, and you know they've done this in the past, and how have they done this for other people. So, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing to explore, but to talk about, you know, whether they're a good or bad idea, it's hard to know, because, you know, what country is it? What is the legal structure? How much assets are you trying to protect? And how much in taxes is that going to save you? And how much do you got to pay a lawyer, not this year, but maybe in the future? And is it worth paying that lawyer enough to avoid the type of taxes that you're going to pay? You know, it's extremely complex and broad category, and I wish I could tell you more about it, but I don't have enough specifics about what you're talking about. If you brought me, you know, the contract, and I could talk to some, you know, people I know in the industry, sure, I could help you out with that. But as you know, just like annuities, insurance contracts, they're extremely complex. There are always caveats. There's always issues. There are always risks. But to speak on them broadly is very difficult. Now, on the new investtalk.com, you see a big blue box with each day's talking point topic. And there's a topic and description. And if it's after the day's program, you can click on the Play Now button and hear the program played back.
401k plans are expensive for employers. They have to be carefully monitored, many administrative functions that have to be provided. There's a solution, and it gives plan employers lots of good reasons to assign their fiduciary responsibilities and liabilities over to a third party. If you'd like to explore something better, go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Justin.
Hi, this is Alex from Tracy, California. I really appreciate if you speak about these two blue chip companies and whether it's a good time to invest on them. One is Procter & Gamble, and the other one is Kraft Foods. And thanks a lot for your program.
All right, he's looking at Procter & Gamble and Kraft. I don't think I got to explain to anybody out there what they do. But Procter & Gamble, earnings are supposed to grow 3% next year, 8% the year after. Yields about 3%. Modest debt. No real growth to speak of. You know, this is a slow growth, if any growth at all, type of company. Return equity is 18%, very profitable. You know, it's had a big run from 78 up to about 88, almost $89 a share today over the past 3 months. So it's kind of a big move for a large company. It's expensive. Bottom line, it is expensive. 21 PE, it's the high end of its PE range. Does it mean that it can't keep going up? No, the chart's strong. There's nothing really telling me that should roll over anytime soon, so it could keep going up. But, you know, this isn't a great entry point or anything. Is it a good long-term company to invest in? Sure, it's very profitable. It's great cash flow, all that. But from a valuation perspective, it's high. It's expensive. Over the long term, this isn't a great long-term place to be buying it, but it doesn't mean long-term you won't make money, say that. Over the next 3 to 5 years, will you have a better chance to get in? Likely, highly likely. But right now, it is definitely overbought and expensive. Let's go to Kraft. Kraft, real quick. Nobody needs an explanation of what they do. Growing a little bit better, 12% earnings growth this year, 7% next year. Earnings grew 18% last quarter, year over year. A little bit better dividend, 3.8% yield. That is nice. Much higher debt, though. Much higher debt. You have a debt, 192% debt-to-equity ratio. It's kind of high. Return equity of 38%. That's pretty high, but it's probably a lot of it has to do with the increased leverage with all that debt. It's going to be more volatile. It has a much higher beta. Beta on Procter & Gamble is 0.44. The beta on Kraft is 0.75. So it's less volatile than the overall market because it's a big blue-chip name, but it is also more expensive, it is more volatile, but it does have a little bit better growth. So of the two, they're both expensive. The PE on Kraft is 20, but it does have a little better growth. You know, in this environment, I rather have more stable than, you know, growth name, and I would probably go with Procter & Gamble over Kraft. But neither of them are very attractive to me on a long-term basis, and Procter & Gamble is more attractive to me on a short-term basis because the chart is much stronger. It's at new highs, whereas Kraft is making lower highs. So I would stay away from Kraft and in Procter & Gamble in the short term, but, you know, longer term, you'll have a better buying opportunity down the road. Now, we've got a good 10 minutes left in the hour. Why not ask that question you've been saving up? There's a line open for you if you get to it now. 888-99-CHART is our number. Do you have a question about one of our topics or call that we answered? Give us a call, 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to our podcast produced 5 days a week, and we thank you for being here. Also, if you'd like a professional review of your retirement portfolio, even though you may live out of range of our California offices, it can still be done using email, fax, and phone. To begin the process, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Schedule a Meeting heading under Steve's picture, and someone will get right back to you. This is Invest Talk, and even if you don't know the difference between balance of trade and a balanced fund, you're welcome to bring whatever question you have to Justin right now at 888-99-CHART.
Tomorrow we have the jobs report for the month of October, and ADP came out with their jobs report. It was come out with their jobs report on the Wednesday before the actual jobs report, and they reported 230,000 jobs created in the month of October. Now, this is the prior month was revised to 225,000 jobs. So pretty much not much of a change. But there was some pretty dramatic data differences this time. First, large firms showed absolutely no growth in employment during the month of October. All of the growth of those 230,000 jobs from the ADP report were from small and mid-sized businesses. Now, trade data that exports are going down rather dramatically. That's what it shows. Trade data shows that exports are going down dramatically. And we're hearing more on corporate earning reports that maybe earnings are being affected a little bit by the stronger dollar. So exports are going down dramatically because of the stronger dollar. And that's, I think, beginning to be factored in by a lot of large companies, which tend to have more exposure overseas than small and mid-sized companies. Now, manufacturing backed off a little bit after a strong September, and construction bounced back after a weak September. Retail trade, which is always important because it's a big part of our economy, didn't really show much of a change, kind of flat, and there was a small amount of improvement in jobs in that category. Now, the biggest issue, though, was business and professional services. That fell. That has been strong recently. Been the biggest category in the national report for many months now. It actually fell a little bit between September and October, which does not bode well for the report coming out tomorrow. You know, then you look at consumer spending. It hasn't really taken off. Consumption growth is not quite, hasn't really caught up either. And that's probably because wage growth hasn't been so hot. Now, it's running at about 0.7% wage growth, 0.7%. You think, 0.7%, that's not that much. Well, you're right, it isn't, but it's not abnormal. It's not super slow either. Over the last 50 years, the range of wage growth is between a little over 2% and minus 1% or so. And the average has been 0.7%. So really, wage growth is average at this time. You would think it'd be a little better with, you know, stock market at new highs and all that. And then you look at savings rates. That's up to 5.6% from 4% a year ago. So there's not a lot of spending going on in the economy. Now, Bob Johnson, an economist for Morningstar, he thinks that we're going to come in below consensus. Consensus is about 240,000 jobs. That's a little bit down from the 248,000 last month. He thinks it's going to come in between 210,000 and 215,000 jobs. Now, if it goes below 150,000 jobs, then we have a big issue. So don't expect a gangbuster report tomorrow. Let's go to Sam in San Francisco. How are you doing, Sam?
Hey, Steve, doing well. Thank you for taking my call. I love your show. Just have a question about work today. The ticker symbol WGY. Mm-hmm. I have bunch of stocks in it. I'm just interested to know whether I can keep it or sell them because it seems like doing very well for the recent weeks.
This is Workday. This is a fairly recent IPO. We IPO'd about a year ago, so you're coming up on that 1 year mark. It develops enterprise cloud-based applications for human capital management, payroll, time tracking, and procurement. So it's a cloud-based piece of software. They don't make money. They're not profitable. So, technically, it's had a pretty decent rally, but you're coming into some pretty big resistance here at about $97 a share. It actually hit it. Could it go up to 103? Sure. But I would take some money off the table. I'm not a fan of this company. It's overvalued. It's overvalued, and technically it's not looking super hot either. So I would stay away from it. I would sell it. Thanks for calling, Sam. Now, before we close the hour, a reminder to register now for our Wealth Workshop webinar. We have a detailed checklist for lining up your portfolio for a comfortable retirement. You can register for free on investtalk.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Justin Klein, and on behalf of Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP Financial, we thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.